It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast as we continue our coverage of the American Athletic Conference, specifically for East Carolina. I'm Dave Richmond along with Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. It's a hot one this afternoon here in Salisbury.
Same here in the eastern part of the state. It's hot from left to right. If you're looking at the map of eastern North Carolina and western North Carolina, from the west to east, the east to west, from north to south, it's hot everywhere. And just like our baseball team, I want to mention that Kyle from LaGrange Barber, we had to record this before he was off, so people wonder about that. Sometimes I can't make it, Bubba can't make it, or Kyle, so he's a big time a part of the podcast. So we want to say we love you, man, and we'll keep going. We've got two amazing guests right today, Bubba, before we get started.
Yeah, we do. Here over the last few podcasts, we've been catching up with a variety of baseball players, a lot of whom played for those super regional teams that the Pirates have had down through the years. And we have a couple more of those guys. Here a couple shows ago, we caught up with Daryl Lawhorn. His twin brother, Trevor Lawhorn, also played for the Pirates for that one season in 2004 after sitting out after transferring from Barton. And Trevor just had a remarkable 2004 campaign, had the second most home runs ever in a season, which we'll discuss during this interview. And then we also heard from Ryan Norwood, huge first baseman, about 6'4", 6'5", and Ryan... Yeah, Big Walt, as he was more commonly known to the diehard Pirate baseball fans and his teammates. And something else I wanted to mention, Dave, you're talking about the tournament going on right now down in Clearwater, and Pirates have an off day today before playing the winner of, the loser of Wichita State and UConn. That game is going on right now, and we'll provide you an update on that one here in a little bit. But a good friend of ours, Mike Radford, was one of a few Pirates that made the trip down there. And Mike's a retired pharmaceutical salesman, and he's someone who was an all-conference wrestler for ECU back in the Southern Conference days. And we look forward to having him and some of his former teammates, as well as Coach Welborn, on the show here in the coming weeks.
Well, some people may not like to hear this, me say this, but we need to bring that back in soccer. So We'll have one battle and one fight at a time. Right now, we need to focus on winning on what we have, but and certainly raise a lot more money before we can talk about those kind of things. But certainly, rich tradition in wrestling. And, you know, Bubba, I wanted to mention to folks that one of the reasons why I'm glad you mentioned that about the wrestling team, we're trying to do something different. That's why we started this podcast, and you and Kyle thankfully said hello and said you would be glad to help out with the podcast, because we want to do something different. If we were the same as the rest of the traditional media, there's no reason to do this podcast, right?
Oh, absolutely. So I think some of the interviews that we've done, like these that we're currently doing with some of the former baseball letter winners, such as Trevor Lawhorn, Ryan Norwood, et cetera, that we just mentioned, these have kind of given us something different, as you said, and kind of been our niche, so to speak.
And they should be celebrated, and we appreciate them very much. Want to give a shout out to the baseball program and all they do. By the way, folks, you need to go ahead and get your tickets because the deadline, I want to mention this, I got a phone call today from the EC ticket office, and that's the fine gentleman there, and basically the deadline is not Monday. Monday is Memorial Day. They'll be closed. The deadline to get your tickets is Tuesday afternoon. So they're going to be swamped on Tuesday because of having the holiday on Monday. If you want to go to those regionals, I'm telling you, folks, you better go ahead and do it now. Do it now. If you don't do it now, being Friday, I'm telling you, Tuesday is going to be an absolute – I don't think they're open on the weekend, Bubba. It's just Monday through Friday. But you better dial 1-800-ECU, dial ECU. That's 1-800-DIAL-ECU, or you can simply go to ecupirates.com. Get your tickets now for the regionals, and actually what's going to happen is we'll know more Monday afternoon about the time and place. And also something else, Bub, I forgot to mention to you, I want to mention as well, the Super Regionals, if we host the Super Regional, the deadline would be Tuesday, June the 4th. Tuesday, June 4th is the deadline for those tickets, but you can go ahead now and dial 1-800-DIAL-ECU, ecupirates.com. You can go there and tell them you want to reserve your ticket. So if we do host, we're going to host a regional, but we're not sure about the super regional. Obviously, we'll find out. And that leads me to my next thing, which I forgot to tell you, Bubba, before we started at recording, and that is they made the announcement. I don't know if you saw this on ecpirates.com, but on Monday at 11 a.m., make sure you're at Sup Dogs downtown. That's where the watch party is going to be this year. They used to have it Mellow Mushrooms. They moved it to Sup Dogs, the biggest and the best voted bar in all of America. They're going to have it this year, 11 a.m. They're going to have a big screen, the parking lot adjacent to Sup Dogs. So if you're going to get there, folks, it's first come, first serve. You better go ahead, and the doors open, so to speak, at 11 a.m. The show starts at noon for that watch party for the selection show for Selection Monday. I'm telling you, folks, you better get there. You know how Sup Dogs is, Bubba. It's awesome. It's a great place, a really hot place in Uptown Greenville. And I wanted to mention that to Pirate fans right now. Make sure you get there at 11. The closer you get there to 11, I'd be there at probably 10:30. Who knows? I'd give yourself a lot of time if you're going to that event on Monday, late Monday morning.
Yeah, Dave, I actually had not seen that yet, but with all the hysteria, if you will, all the excitement surrounding Sup Dogs with the Barstool Sports Best Bar, yep, in the nation, that national championship of bars. Hopefully, that'll be pretty cool to see the road to hopefully another national championship again at Sup Dogs.
That would be great. And it starts at Sup Dogs again Monday morning, 11 a.m. So the selection show is at noon. They said, folks, on ecpirates.com, first come, first serve basis. So if you get there and they have too many people, they're going to turn you away. Get there as soon as you can around 11 o'clock on Monday. All right, Bubba, I know the Pirates had a big win yesterday. Do you want to talk about that real quick and then go to our first guest?
Yeah, after that tough loss, 6-2 to Wichita State, I'm very interested to see how the Pirates bounce back. And not surprisingly, they bounce back as they have all year. That loss to Wichita State, that was just the third time all year the Pirates had lost consecutive ball games, and it was the first since being swept out at UCLA. And prior to UCLA, you had to go way back to the last couple games there in February when the Pirates lost game 3 to Monmouth, and then that Monday game, the rare Monday game against Air Force. So the Pirates have been so consistent this year, it was not surprising whatsoever to see them bounce back in a big way against the Houston Cougars. And unfortunately for the league, Houston's NCAA hopes are done after them going 0-2 in the tournament. But yeah, the main thing is the Pirates are continuing to play. And how about the way we swung the bats yesterday? Jake Agnew's pitched well. He didn't have his A game, but he battled and gave us several good innings. And when you have 3 home runs and you have Jake Washer hitting 2, he's now tied with Spencer Brickhouse for the team lead with 12. And then you have Burley hitting another one. He's right there, I think 9 or 10 now. So it was great to see us after struggling with the bats again against Clayton McGinnis to put up 15 hits against Houston.
No doubt about it, Bubba. The last 2 games have not been what the Pirates have wanted to end the regular season at home against Memphis at Clark LeClaire. And then the first game there, you wanted to start off well. But I told you that before, and then after that game, people were panicking. I was worried about that Wichita State game. I thought they needed everything they could to in other words, they put everything they had in that game because they had a lot to lose. If they lose that game, and then obviously lose another one, but they need to win this tournament to be in the regionals, so to speak, and just to be in the tournament. And we, on the other hand, have a little bit of wiggle room. I was concerned about that. And then with Clayton McGinnis, I mean, just everything was not right about that game. And there were a lot of people panicking. I said, hey, we're going to play better against Houston. I had a good feeling about the Houston game. And not only did I thought we'd win the game, it's how we won the game that surprised me in a good way. You know the Pirates are capable of that. They had those chances in Memphis, the Memphis game, and the Wichita State game. And, Bubba, it really – I know people may think that they scored too many runs and maybe save them for the next opponent. I think that was definitely a signature win. I think that was one that was one of the style points and one that sent a message to the rest of the league. You better be ready for East Carolina now. They've got that loss out of the way. Their backs – I don't know what it is about this team. They love their backs against the wall. and they're swinging. They're street fighters, and I love that about them.
Yeah, we've seen it time and again this year. Like I was saying just a couple minutes ago, and that win exemplifies and just embodies what this team's all about. How tremendously tough, and all the veteran leadership. We've seen it time and again this year, responding within games and then after tough losses. And like I said, it was no surprise whatsoever that we came back and took care of business against Houston. Maybe it was a little bit of a surprise with all Houston had on the line that we did so convincingly. But, yeah, no surprise that we won the ball game. But going back to that game against Wichita State just briefly, I was kind of like you. I wasn't stunned that we lost, just because of the way McGinnis had shut us down a couple weeks prior. But at the same time, I did think that we would get to him more than we would, and we started the game very well. We made him throw 30 pitches in the first inning and pushed across a run. I was like, okay. And I said, well, we're going to take care of business against this guy today. But to his credit, he shut us down again. He only had about 3 Ks, but he was getting us out, which is all that matters. So, so tip your hat to him, and we bounce back, and hopefully we'll keep swinging the bats well, and Cooch will have a solid outing against either UConn or Wichita State on Friday afternoon.
Another thing to keep in mind, folks, is that I noticed there are some people probably, and I'm not one of them, so let me make that very clear. Unfortunately, sometimes in Pirate Nation, people misunderstand what you're saying, but I think there's some people that probably thought, well, why didn't we start Jake Agnos the first game? And the reason you don't is because that first game was kind of like a midweek game, is what you had to treat it. The second game is kind of like what would be the Thursday, Friday night starter, if you will, like Jake Agnos, which he pitched. Cooch Meaner is normally the Friday starter, Saturday starter. And then you have Tyler Smith, I would think, that would go the next route. So you already have Burleson did a fantastic job against Wichita State. 6 innings, 1 run. I mean, you can't ask for more from him. We had our chances and just didn't do it with the bats. I mean, you were talking about that we had the fifth and the ninth. I think we had both had bases loaded. So we had our chances to score. We didn't. We lose 6-2. Nice win, bounce back win yesterday, being Wednesday. And we're recording here on Thursday as the Pirates have a day off. We're taking advantage of the day off by giving you more content and getting you ready, setting you up for it'll be either Wichita State again, or we'll see the likes of UConn. Either one, this time of year, you got to respect the opponent. So good luck to the Pirates. We'll keep you up to that. We're going to try to see if we can get someone with either a team that follows a team from whoever wins. We'll try to. If we do, we'll have that up on, by the way, all the stuff on SoundCloud, and we'll be doing that, our non-traditional podcast, if you will, when we just have interviews. Always look on SoundCloud, on the Sports Objective page, our profile, and you'll find all our stuff there. And Bubba does a nice job of helping out with that, and certainly with the interviews. By the way, speaking of interviews, do you want to go to our first one?
Yeah, Dave, but before we do, I actually have an update on that UConn-Wichita State game. The Huskies are leading the Shockers 1-0 in the bottom of the second. And again, that's as of about 10-4 on Thursday afternoon. So Shockers facing an early deficit, and they're in a situation where this game, the loser will, of course, meet the Pirates, and then the winner of that game will have to beat whoever wins this Wichita State-UConn game twice. So with that being said, let's catch up with Trevor Lawhorn, one of the top sluggers in East Carolina history in terms of individual seasons and single-season home runs, with 21 way back in 2004. And here is that interview with Trevor right now.
What an exciting time for ECU is this time of year, of course, is ECU baseball. And, Bubba, we had one half of the tandem, the brothers, last week, and now this week we've got the other one, right?
Yeah, a little less than a week ago, we caught up with Darryl Lawhorn, of course, one excellent slugger in Pirate history, ranks right up there all time in career home runs. And today we're going to catch up with his brother, who was also a member of that 2004 Super Regional team, the winningest East Carolina baseball team in school history with 51 wins. And I'm, of course, talking about Trevor Lawhorn. Trevor, welcome into the show.
How's it going, guys?
Very excited to have you. And, Trevor, I'll tell you what, we're excited because this Pirate team is right up there, I think, with you guys, is now 43 wins. So that magical number is 8 to tie the most wins in school history, your team. And just really excited and happy for the program. And I know that you're out in, I believe, South Dakota. How far, I should say, how much do you watch and keep up with the program?
You know, I try to keep up with it online as much as I can at work. You know, I actually watched the game today, hoping they would rebound like they did. You know, the last two losses were kind of unfortunate, but get the ball rolling back in the right direction in the right time and get them ready for the regionals and supers.
One of the questions I had for you is, I know every team is different, Noel, but as far as the team in 2004, your team, and now, do you get to a point where it's, there's a lot of fatigue? I know there's injuries this time of year. How tough is it to keep that ball rolling, so to speak, when I know you guys were blistering through that 2004 season?
Yeah, I don't really think fatigue really sets in just because you're so well-conditioned and you're ready for it. You know, these coaches and strength coaches and everybody, they know what it takes to get you ready for a full season and into the super regionals and regionals and all that stuff. And, you know, it's more of dealing with the heat than anything. I think, you know, staying hydrated and stuff like that. But fatigue, I besides the heat fatigue, I think physically they're fine.
Yeah, this team this year has been remarkably consistent. We were talking about it earlier today, Dave and I, that is, and this was just the third time that we had lost consecutive games, and it's the first time we've lost consecutive games going back about a month and a half to that UCLA series.
Yeah, they put one heck of a streak together, you know, right here towards the end, and like I said, it's kind of unfortunate to lose that last one to Memphis and then drop the first one there in the tournament the other day. But like I said, I watched today and they got the ball rolling. I think I turned it on right when they put up the seventh spot against Houston. And I was like, yep, this game's over with. So I had to leave anyway. So it was 13-2, I think the final was.
Yep. It ended up 13-2. And that's something else has come up with this run and the team's been on is that 2004 season. I think we were 48-11 after going 1-2 in the conference tournament, and we got robbed of a national seed that season. And I remember a lot of the South Carolina fans when we played those guys in the Super Regional talking about that and how they said we shouldn't have had to play you guys until Omaha.
You know, I agree. But, you know, there's guys that, you know, they have their job to do the selections, and that's what they did. They put us in the Super Regional with South Carolina, and, you know, that just – forced us to get on there and take care of business. And unfortunately, you know, we lost two games, but they were close games, you know, so we were pretty well matched up with those guys. And I'm almost, didn't they win the national championship that year?
They didn't win it. They actually here, there a few years later, they won two in a row, nearly won three in a row that year. They performed well in Omaha. I think they finished about third or something like
okay.
that. But yeah,
I knew they weren't no slouch at all. But
right.
I just couldn't remember if they won or not.
Right. Yeah. That was a heck of an atmosphere down there at Sarge Fry, like you said, and two close ball games. I believe it was something like 5-3 and 4-2.
Yeah, and you know, mixed in with about a 3.5-4 hour rain delay too. That didn't help out all that much either.
Well, that was something last year that really hurt Trevor. Is you know, Agnos was pitching lights out against UNCW, and then what was it, a million-hour rain delay we had in just the regionals last year that really hurt, because when a pitcher's pitching that great, obviously you can't bring him back in after he's performed so well. But, you know, we have a disastrous inning, and hopefully this year they're talking about, and the projections are for the regionals, North Carolina State, Illinois State, and also Campbell, which is another dangerous team that we lost to back in February.
Yeah,
but
and the last game against them was really close too. I want to say it was a walk off.
Yes.
I clearly keep up with them. You know, sometimes I can't watch, but I try to read up on the games as much as I can.
Let's talk about your career. I know that you started at Barton. What led you to Barton, and then what led you to come and transfer to East Carolina?
So, you know, I think with Daryl's interview, he said that we both went on a visit to hang out, you know, to go see East Carolina, and Coach DeClaire wanted us there, and, you know, it just ended up being they offered him a scholarship and pretty much offered me a spot on the team, kind of a walk-on spot. And, you know, being a greedy high school kid. I didn't really like that all that much, my twin brother getting money and me not. But so I went to Barton and, had pretty much, besides the ridiculous numbers that Daryl put up his freshman year, all the accolades in the CVAC, I got the same accolades as Daryl did and ended up putting up a pretty good season my freshman year there. And I was on the golf course playing with a couple of my teammates, and my dad gave me a call and told me that ECU wanted me to transfer there. And I said, where do I sign up? And that was it.
Yeah, that's what Go ahead, Dave. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say with Coach Randy Mazey, what kind of coach was he? I know he's doing very, very well now this year with West Virginia, but can you talk about that time when one of the best teams ever and certainly with the most wins ever in school history? What was Coach Mazey like to play for?
Yeah, he's a really good coach. You know, he's a great motivator. I tell people to this day that he had me believing that we would honestly go undefeated. And
wow.
Going up to that Arizona State series, we were 15-0 or something like that going in there, and, you know, confidence real high. And we got swept, but those three games were also close. And still, you know, to this day, it's like, yeah, this guy, he's really good at motivating. He's a very good coach, and he knows what he's doing. You know, it's just he was a fun guy to play for when we were winning. You know, if it was something that a game that we shouldn't have won or we lost late or something like that, then any coach is going to be, you know, aggravated about that one. But who isn't? You know, you want to win everything.
Yeah, Trevor, when you talk about that Arizona State series, I remember following it very closely, and it was a lot like the UCLA series this year where we were right in every ball game and just didn't make the plays we needed to come out on the winning side.
Exactly. You know, this team now, you know, is really, really mirrors the team that we had in 2004 as far as what the schedule is like, how their record has ended up, and, you know, the tough teams they played. You know, you would think earlier in the season, those games that they lost, probably, you know, if you talk to CG or Coach Cliff Godwin, he probably would say they probably shouldn't have lost those games. But, you know, if you're going to lose early. And, you know, and like, you know, now they have they're on a pretty good roll and getting it hot in the right time.
Trevor, I was going to ask that very thing is a very, you know, I remember during that time, and we're covering the team very closely, obviously, now with this podcast. And it was funny because, Bubba, you remember this, being local, following close, we actually had fans who were just like going out of their mind. And I know the expectations were high. People were saying this is like the 2017 season. But when you had Spencer Brickhouse and Bryant Packard, who hadn't played together but a handful of games, both of them had gotten hurt at individual times, and then collectively they were hurt. And it was a situation where, again, if you want them to be hurt, you definitely want them to be hurt and losing early versus like being hurt right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, those two guys are the backbone of the team. You got Packard leading off, who's he hit like 400 last year, and he's pretty close to it this year. And, you know, Brickhouse, he just hits bombs left and right, and he puts up good at-bats every at-bat, it seems like. And he's a tough out, and he's a big dude, intimidating. And you want those guys in there. You know, you want them to be on base for each other, and you want them to drive each other in. And, you know, it's just those two guys are really the backbone and put together a good – start off, you know, for a game. You know, Packard leads it off, starts it off. It's kind of like we had Jamie Page, you know, little Jay, if he got a hit, we know we were ready to roll. We were going. You know, he starts us off and we get it going.
Now, Trevor, you were talking about Spencer Brickhouse and him hitting bombs in that 2004 season with the Pirates. And so you hit 21, which is second most all time in a single season behind Winfred Johnson's 22. This is a question we asked Daryl as well. Do you have any in particular that really stand out?
I listened to his podcast, and that, you know, the one where we went back to back against Memphis, that one stands out. And I will reiterate on the one in Charlotte where I hit back to back, one foul and one fair. threw the bat towards their dugout because their little shortstop hit his first one all season, and he came chirping around the bases when I was playing at second. So I was kind of showing him up a little bit. but I think in my biggest one would probably be the 6 games in a row that I hit a home run. I hit 6 in a row that tied Cliff with that record. I don't remember who it was against, but
for some reason, I want to say that the number 6 was against Louisville. I know at least one of them, I think, was against Louisville. Maybe it was a grand slam, and we were down fairly big in that game at Harrington Field, and you hit that one.
Yeah, and then, you know, there was a walk-off against Houston, I believe. No, that was Louisville, the walk-off home run.
Yeah, the grand slam yeah, I'm thinking of was actually at Duke. There was one at Duke. Yeah. It was early in the ball game.
Yeah, the one at Duke was it was memorable because of the grand slam, but we also turned a triple play.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, a true triple play, a ground ball to Kaz over there at third, and we turned it. So that game does stand out as well.
That's not every day that you see a triple play. I wanted to ask about pitching. Do you think the pitching is strong enough? I know I think I've heard the analysts say it's good enough to make it to Omaha. Do you think with being late in the season, do we have enough pitching in your mind? I know I'm putting you on the spot. I know it's hard to never really know. There's different ways you make it to Omaha with different teams and how they're built. But do you think we have enough?
I do. You know, I think our starting pitching is peaking at the right time. You know, we've had solid guys. You know, Agnos has been solid. You got Cush Maynard, who's thrown a one-hitter in a perfect game this year, and he's, you know, that left-hander that likes to spot it in a way and kind of, you know, make hitters get really defensive swinging. And then who's the other lefty? He hits too. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, Alec Burleson.
Yeah,
Burley started yesterday, and even though we lost the ball game, he went a solid 6 innings.
Only one run.
So I think our starting pitching, as long as we get deep in the game, you know, if they throw 7-8 innings, and we can only, you know, the thing is, I think majority of the games we've lost this year, it's been kind of a early in the bullpen kind of thing. And if
right.
we can get our starters to get a little deeper in the games, I think we do have a really good chance. Cause I want to say we have a couple of seniors that throw out of the bullpen that throw it pretty good. You know, you can't really stretch those guys out too long. If you get 2-3 outs out of them, you know, bring in the next guy.
Like with Sam Lanier and Volva, Nevin Volva.
Yeah. You know, those guys that have the repetitions and the experience to come out of the bullpen in big games like that.
Yeah, Sam Lanier and Evan Volova coming on strong this year is very much like Davis Kirkpatrick a year ago. He was someone he had been coming off an injury and or at least one, maybe two seasons where he didn't pitch his best, but then he had a remarkable senior season.
Right. And I also think, you know, if those guys, if we make it to Omaha and Agnos and those guys, they're going to be itching. I think if they tell Coach Cliff that, hey, they can throw, they can go that day, you best believe they're probably going to be down there in that bullpen ready to go.
Oh, yeah. That's one thing that I'm always interested in seeing with pitch counts and everything. And I know Agnos, it was a game, Bubba, a few weeks back where, I mean, he was rolling through, and he wanted to. Well, it was about the 7th or 8th inning. He wanted to go all the way. And
it was actually, I think, with 2 outs in the top of the 9th. And
oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, his pitch count was such that. I mean, being a competitor, he wanted to finish out the game, but Cliff knew that. But it was funny after the game. The reporters, of course, asked Cliff about it, and Coach just said, and he said, I love Jake. Jake loves me. He said, nothing else needs to be said.
Yeah, but that's what you want. You know, you want those guys to be out there and to go the full, you know, the complete game. And it's just, you know, Cliff had to do what he had to do. And if that pitch count is way, way up, then he's just got to pull them.
And you got to have and also that he was looking out for his player because for his career beyond East Carolina and the fact that he knew that I'm sure that with this time of year coming up, where we are now, that you have a situation where there's a lot of games. Can you talk about that very thing of what it's like being a player and playing a whole bunch of games between a conference tournament? You have the regionals and super regionals. That's a lot of games in a short period of time.
It is. But, you know, as a player, you don't really think about that. As a player, you're going out there, you're playing Friday, Saturday, Sunday every week, and maybe, you got one or two midweek games, so you're playing four or five games a week. That's kind of second nature to you. And, right. You know, these guys have played baseball their entire life, and that's what they want to do. You know, when you get into a tournament setting, it's no different than playing travel baseball when you're coming up through high school and the lower ranks. You're going to play possibly two, three games a day in travel ball tournaments. So these guys are they're bred for this. You know, they have trained their bodies to be able to play a bunch of games in a row, and it's only going to get every single day, you know, the higher they go. When you get to pro ball, it's every single day through the summer. You get a few days off.
Trevor, something I wanted to ask you before we move on and talk about your pro career is just looking at that 2004 lineup, in addition to yourself and Daryl, you had the likes of Ryan Jones, who was a Golden Spikes Award candidate that year and just had a remarkable season. You had Ryan Norwood, who hit over 380, I believe it was, and had something ridiculous like 35 doubles. And then there were other quality bats throughout that lineup, like you mentioned with Jamie Page. So talk a little bit about that lineup and the comparisons it draws to the current lineup with Burley, Brick, Pack, et cetera, Washer, who had two home runs today and now has 12 on the season. Obviously, the bats are different, but I still see a lot of similarities. Excuse me.
Yeah. I mean, there's really no break in the lineup. You know, the lineup we had Jamie Page leading off, and the thing that we told him is like, you go, we go. You know, you get a hit, we're on a roll. And that's all that dude did. He just hit the ball. He's a great hitter. And then me, my brother, Kaz, we had Walt over there at first. Billy Richardson, he kind of struggled, that year in 2004, but 2005, he picked it back up. That whole lineup was just, there was no break in action for the pitcher. So they really had to be aware of who was up to bat, and if you're going to pitch around this guy, who's behind him? You pitch around Jones, Daryl's behind him. You pitch around Daryl, I'm behind him, or vice versa. Walt's in there with 34 doubles, and it was just a tough lineup to pitch to. And I see a lot of similarities with the lineup that Cliff's got this year, starting off with Packard, who is pretty much a 400 hitter. Three hits each game, and then you got Brickhouse and Burley and Washer and all those guys. There's really no break in there. And if you do have a break, Cliff's got guys that can hit and run, throw the bunt down. It's just, the way Cliff coaches and teaches these guys how to play, it sets up perfect for the way he does it.
We'll talk about your pro career. And after East Carolina, can you talk about starting out where you went and give us a kind of a idea of I guess there was a lot of travels and that's why you're in South Dakota?
Oh yeah, so I got drafted in the ninth round by Cincinnati in 2004. I went out to Billings, Montana to play my short season out there, and then after that I stayed with the Cincinnati Reds for another two seasons, my low A ball out in Dayton, Ohio for the Dayton Dragons, and then my high A ball in Sarasota for the Sarasota Reds. And then once that season was done with, well, I will say when I was in Sarasota, they moved me from second to third, and I had never played third base in my life. So that was kind of a transition for me in a prospect league trying to learn how to play third base. That was a lot of fun. I probably should have called Kaz and got some tips. But after that, that off season, I got traded to the Blue Jays in a big league trade for Scott Schoenweiss. And then I went to spring training with the Blue Jays, and they ended up releasing me, where I ended up coming out here in Sioux Falls my first in 2007 for my first stint. That year I got picked up twice once by the Mariners and then came back here, and then I got picked up by the Nationals, where I played out my contract with them. That was when Daryl ended up on the same team with me in the Carolina League. We ended up winning the championship there. And then once that was done, they didn't re-sign me, so I came back out here to Sioux Falls and played out my career in 2012, and I met my wife out here, and now we live here. My son's 2 years old, and his name's Maddox, and he loves sports and baseball and all that good stuff. And now I'm a network engineer for a telecommunications company out here.
Sounds like he's got a bright future for baseball. I love the name Maddox. Is that after Greg Maddox, or?
It's a family name.
Okay.
My mom's side is their last name is Mattox, but I didn't want anybody to shorten his name to Matt, so I made it Maddox. But Greg Maddox is one of my favorite pitchers of all time with the Braves, so we can say it's a baseball name.
And by the way, we have joining us now one of the other co-hosts, Kyle from LaGrange. Kyle, did you have a question?
No, I just got in, so I haven't heard much of the interview, so I don't want to repeat anything that's already been said. So I'm just sitting back and listening at this point. So y'all just keep going. If I have something, I'll jump in.
Trevor, a moment ago when we were talking about that 2004 lineup and how potent it was, when you mentioned that name Walt, I think back to those instant interviews on ecupirates.com. That was my junior year of college, and I laughed so hard at those instant interviews, and we're actually going to be talking to Big Walt, Ryan Norwood, tomorrow. So, tell us a little bit about Walt, and then just those instant interviews. I recall something like, who hits better, Ryan Norwood or a seventh grade girl?
Yeah, you know, Walt, he plays hard, man. That guy's, he was awesome. He's a big old first baseman, 6'4" or 6'5", and he was, you know, for that size, the dude can run. And he always, you know, whenever he hit the ball, the one thing he did was run hard out of the box every single time. And, you know, of those 34 doubles, I'd say probably 31 of them were quote-unquote Walt doubles that we make fun of them about, where they were like a bloop single that normally would be, but he turned them into a double because he'd just keep on running.
Right.
But and you know, all of us guys, we give him a hard time about that. But, you know, just kidding about he majority of those doubles he earned. But, yeah, he's a great guy. You know, we always stay in contact, and those instant interviews, I completely forgot about that until you mentioned that. You know, we'd have, you know, Kaz would get on there and start asking some questions, and it was just, you know, a fun time to have to deal with all of our friends and teammates on those little interviews.
How close do y'all stay as far as teammates now? It seems like all the baseball players we've interviewed, including your brother, it's like you guys are pretty close still.
We are, you know, pretty much that entire 2004 team, we had a string of texts that we put together, and, you know, we try to get together with each other in Greenville, you know, every 2 or 3 years or so. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, during baseball season especially, we're sitting there texting with each other. Even, you know, Brett Lingren, who is an assistant coach out there in Cal, somewhere in California. No, not he was at Fullerton, but somewhere – Irvine, he's at Irvine, Cal Irvine. You know, he makes the time to look at his phone and answer, you know, chirp in every now and then too when he's not busy. So, yeah, we have a group of, I don't know, 10 guys or so that we just talk all the time about with.
Looking at the regional projections, a lot of them have West Virginia as the 2 seed in Greenville. I don't know if it's been touched on, but it'd be kind of weird for all you guys who played for Coach Mazey to see him in Clark LeClaire in a different color uniform.
Different uniform. That would be something if he ended up going back there for the regional or super regional or however it would work out. But, you know, it would be – if I were there, I'd like to be a fly on the wall to see how everyone would react to him being there. You know, it's kind of like – he played at Clemson. We were down in South Carolina, and he had some choice words for all those Gamecock fans when we got down there. And I'll tell you what, we got off the bus and it was rowdy.
Yeah.
So I would imagine Greenville's probably going to be close to the same if they do get there.
Hey,
yeah, Trevor.
Trevor, think about the jungle.
that would be pretty fun to see.
Yeah, Trevor, what you referenced about that 2004 Super Regional in South Carolina, I guess it was maybe the state newspaper, there was a quote by Coach Mazie, and it said, I have a tiger paw somewhere on my body that they're going to see before the weekend's over.
Yeah, see, I knew it was something like that, but we didn't get the full experience of what the quote was.
Yeah. Because I remember South Carolina fans yelling at us and just talking about, where's that tiger paw? Where's that tiger paw?
Yeah, I knew he had said something about it, but, you know, that was – he wanted to get them riled up and get the most hostile environment possible for us to play in because, you know, we played good in that. And, you know, it didn't faze us much really at all. It was just how he liked to do things.
Yeah, sure, I don't know if it's been touched on or not. You know, being doing the interview late with that 04 team, man, you know, y'all got screwed. Y'all should have been a national seed and getting paired with South Carolina. Both those, it really,
yeah.
I would imagine they were nervous too, meaning the Gamecocks. I mean, that was a tough draw getting y'all as they were a national seed. And it was really not fair. And they have fixed that a little bit, you know, with they don't just pair now regionally with the in the Supers. They reseed. And I always thought that 04 team got screwed.
Yeah, you know, we touched on that a little bit earlier, but yeah, I have to agree. You know, as good of a record we had and as tough of a schedule as we had, I feel like, you know, we did get screwed, even though that our tournament, we went out down in the tournament and didn't play very well, but, you know, it is what it is. That shouldn't have affected how our regional and super regional ended up or even our national seed. But, you know, like I said, that those guys that make the decisions, it's kind of like the college football. No one's going to be satisfied with what they pick. And it just so happened we got in their regional and or super regional, and we had to take it with a grain of salt and go after them. You know.
And Trevor, I want to ask as far as I know Daryl told us last week, and we just talked right before the interview started about you're only 2.5 hours from Omaha. I take it if we make it Omaha, you're going to be going 85, 90 miles an hour to Omaha? You're going to be driving really fast?
You're damn right I will be. I tell Cliff, you know, the first game of the season, I text him, I say, tell the boys good luck. Can't wait to see you in Omaha because I'll be the first face you see when you get off that bus.
So there you go.
And I think I told Bubba that, you know, I will never set foot in that stadium unless the Pirates are there. Even as close as I live to it.
No, I agree with you there. And I know how special would it be, we've asked a lot of the Pirate players, but how special would it be for former players to see the final you do get to Omaha?
It's, you know, the ultimate goal. It always has been, even with, you know, Coach DeClair, Omaha's it. And to have the streak that East Carolina has, 29, 30 appearances in the NCAA tournament without a appearance in the College World Series, it really makes no sense with the talent that we bring in
right.
to ECU, but, you know, it's kind of, well, do you take it as far as are the teams getting screwed by putting in, you know, putting them in really tough super regionals, or is it just not meant to be? And, you know, it just hasn't happened, but, you know, this team has a really good shot to do it this year, and if they do, like I said, I'm going to be there, I promise you. Me and my wife and my kid will all be there.
And maybe hopefully a future Pirate we can count on in the next 15 years or so, or 16, I guess, right? Well, he'll be a freshman, then hopefully he'll be coming to East Carolina east to Greenville.
He's going to have to stay with his Uncle D, as he calls him, down there in Greenville.
Uncle D, I love it. I love it. Well, I'll tell you what, Trevor, we've had a blast with you. You've been generous and great to catch up with you and great to meet you here. And hopefully we can be saying in a few weeks that we can all get together in Omaha, Nebraska. That would be tremendous.
Absolutely. I want to see y'all face to face.
Thank you very much, Trevor. Appreciate you, buddy. And all the way in South Dakota, you heard Daryl's. And I'll tell you what, folks, it's 2014. We have a lot of fun with them. You understand why they won 51 games. Very close. It's the program, the culture in baseball anyway for this program at East Carolina has always been close. Lots of great players. If you don't believe us, there's been so many guys to go. And I just want to say this, Bubba, before we move on to our next guest. The stat that I don't want – I want to get rid of the stat for 30 straight times that we haven't made made it to Omaha. I hope we can hold that number at 29. And if we don't do it this year, it'll be 30. I don't want 30. I want to stay at 29 where we go into Omaha, and let's do that. We have our next guest ready, and Bubba, I'll tell you what, another great interview from the 2014.
Yeah, and people that followed that team closely and that have followed Pirate baseball closely down through the years certainly know the name Ryan Norwood, or as I mentioned earlier in the show, Big Walt, about a 6'4", 6'5", first baseman out of the Richmond area. And so let's go to that interview right now with Big Walt, also known as Ryan Norwood.
Baseball season continues. Pirates got a big win yesterday, 13-2 over Houston. And Bubba, I tell you what, we've been very excited to have a lot of great baseball players from the past and that really built this program, and we have another one right now, right?
Yeah, no doubt about it, Dave. That 2004 team, of course, won more games than any other team in East Carolina baseball program history. And so now, after catching up with the Longhorns in recent podcasts, we're going to be catching up with Ryan Norwood, better known as Big Walt. Ryan, welcome into the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks so much for having me. It's always a good day to talk Pirate baseball.
No doubt about it, and especially this team is very special. Kind of like that's what we've been, not to put pressure on the 2019 team, but that 2014, very, very special, just like Bub alluded to, with the number of wins of 51. School record, obviously, for ECU baseball. Our team right now stands at 43, so hopefully they can definitely come close or beat the record. I guess they'd have to get to Omaha. But we're so excited to have you on. And first off, can you talk about how you came to ECU? How did you become a Pirate?
Sure, yeah. Actually, it's a funny story. I was down at ECU. Coach Mack had seen me at a tournament. And I came down to ECU actually for a football camp and loved it, loved the school. Didn't know a whole lot about the baseball program at that time. Mack had started reaching out and recruiting me, and I was at the Outer Banks on vacation with my family. And my mother and I drove to ECU on the way home to actually meet Coach Mack at the time. And oddly enough, Coach LeClaire was there. But I didn't know enough about the baseball program to even know he was the head coach. And I'll never forget meeting him for the first time. He walked into the room, and I don't even think I stood up to shake his hand. I just sat in the chair and shook his hand. Anyhow, it's probably not the best first impression, but they really, at that point in time, they really reiterated that ECU was indeed a baseball school. So I think they had a little bit, the coaches had a little bit of a rivalry there with the football coaches at the time. So right. Anyhow, that was my first impression. I came down on a recruiting trip and stayed with Will Brinson. I got to meet Davey Penny, Sam Naren, Neil Sears, a lot of the pitching staff at the time. And really just, I fell in love with the school and the program. I loved everything about East Carolina, and I was ready to commit that day. I didn't. I kind of played the recruiting game a little bit and went on a couple of other visits, but ECU had my heart from the beginning, and the rest is history.
And, Bubba, I know that we're glad that he came to ECU, right?
Oh, of course. A key component of that era, particularly that 2004 team, something that Ryan and I had discussed off the air, was just how he holds the record for single season doubles with 34. And I mentioned to him how, with our interview with Trevor, how we talked about how a lot of those obviously hit the ball extremely well, but he was also known for hustling out of the box. And a bunch of those, as Trevor said, were quote Walt doubles.
You know, let me explain that. I think those guys are just jealous. You know, you got to hustle at all times. I think the patented Walt double was like a weak, terrible swing with an ugly flare over the first baseman's head that rolls just far enough out of range from anybody to get to before I can security second base. So those guys like to rib me a lot, but there are a fair share of those doubles in there. But I'd like to think on paper no one can tell how pretty or how ugly those doubles actually are.
Yeah, and also that 2004 season ranks, I think you're tied for 10th in single season batting average above 380. And a little bit more about the doubles. Like you said, I agree with you, and that record's probably not going anywhere anytime soon because you have 8 more than any other Pirate has had in a single season, and that second most was Ryan Jones. Of course, Jones, who was a part of that 2004 club as well.
Oh, yeah. I think, for a while, I feel like Jonesy and I batted back-to-back. I'll never forget. We had a nice conversation. It was coming out in the Super Regional at South Carolina, and we were coming out of a rain delay, and he came up to bat, and I remember thinking, I said to him, if it were me, I'd be looking dead red fastball right here. First pitch after a long delay, and sure enough, he smokes a double. So it was, I enjoy playing with Ryan Jones a lot. He's a heck of an athlete, and we still keep in touch to this day.
What do you think made the 2004, we've been talking about the 2019 team being so special. What made you guys so special? It's hard to believe it's 15 years ago. I was just doing the math in my head. It seems like it was just yesterday.
I know, it really does. I don't know. I can only imagine that every team that plays at ECU is a very tightly knit unit. We were so close. I still keep in touch with 6, 7, 8 of those guys. I mean, at least weekly we have a nice group chat, and it's like nothing ever changed. And I don't know, just how tight we were. There weren't many egos. Everyone pulled for each other. You know, if it wasn't – the hero wasn't the same person every time. If Trevor didn't hit a bomb to win the game, Jonesy did. If a pitcher was off, someone else stepped up and did the job. It just felt like – I can't even describe how much fun. It just felt like we could do no wrong. I don't think we lost a game in April. I mean, we scored 32 runs against Cincinnati. We still joke about that one. I think Jamie Page was 7 for 7 that game, which is just unheard of to think you could go up to the plate 7 times and get 7 hits. We really could do no wrong. And I don't know what made it so special, but we were a really, really close knit group of guys.
Yeah, Ryan, I recall that Cincinnati series. I think one of those games we won something like 32-14.
Yes, there was a lot of trash talking from those guys. They were up on us. If I remember correctly, they were up on us fairly big. And gosh, they couldn't get us out. It was like a football game. I've never scored that many runs in a game. I wish we'd have saved a few of them for the Super Regionals. But anyhow, that was a fun series.
And the biggest thing is that very thing, this team we have now, I think we were talking last night with Trevor with Coach Mazie. What made him special to you? I know that he was a one heck of a coach. Obviously, you don't win 51 games without true leadership like from him.
Yeah, you know, I've got an interesting relationship with Coach Mazie. A lot of people didn't like him, and he was really tough on us, pretty sarcastic. You know, he would really kind of grind you down. And finally, it was my first year with him, sophomore year, and I went into it. We were at TCU. It was like the first inning. I had the bases loaded, and I lined into a double play to first base. And then it was like late in the game, and we were losing. And I hit like a solo home run. And I just remember him saying, "Well, you always do this. You always get the big hit when it doesn't matter." And you know, it really ticked me off. But to be fair, it was at that. I mean, in the moment, it was accurate. And I remember we got back to Greenville. That was at TCU. We got back to Greenville, and I sat down with him in his office, and I just said, "Coach, if I can be honest with you, I feel like you're you're the biggest a-hole I've ever played for." And I said it, you know, I kind of made sure. I was like, "Hey, this is a free space. We can talk," you know. And I did it with the right tone. I wasn't going in there aggressively. And I just – but he kind of broke it down. He said, "Listen, if you think that comment was me being, you know, me being a jerk," and he was like, "I'm just trying to get you fired up to play. And if it takes a little bit of spark coming from me," and he said one thing I'll never forget. He said, if you hate me, but I get you to Omaha, will you care?" And I thought, "Nope, I will not care, because if I get to Omaha, nothing matters." And that was kind of, I don't know that that was his intent, but that's the way he coached, and I have fired up a lot of guys, but he was successful, and you can't argue with that. So he really, I feel like he got the most out of guys, and we probably hated him, but that, I think some of that's what brought us closer. God, I'll never forget, we used to, when we train and condition, he'd always say one more rep, and it became point where we'd run, and he wouldn't even have to tell us. We'd run 10 sprints, and we would do 11, you know, and it got to the point that was instilled in us, just one more. I don't know, but he got the most out of us.
That, you know, Bubba, when you think about it, when with my theater and coaching, having playing background, not at the level you guys played at, but that's certainly true. There's so many times when coaches would say things that would upset you, but yet the truth hurts, but yet also it kind of it brings out some people. I guess it depends on, some people want to be champions, some people want to be challenged, and I guess it depends on the player, but I love to be challenged. I love to be challenged. How about you, Bubba?
Oh, absolutely. And coaches have to know their players and know which buttons to push and that sort of thing, for sure. And that's one of those things. Some guys are motivated by those sorts of comments, and then some will go into a tank. But it's like Ryan said, and like you were kind of alluding to, Dave, it's about developing mental toughness. And because when you're going to be playing on a big stage, like in a super regional down in Columbia in front of 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, however many Gamecock fans, packed into Sarge Fry, you know you're going to hear all kinds of stuff. And obviously Coach Mazie knew that, having played at Clemson and having coached on a big-time level.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, we actually right now look at the coach we have now. What are your thoughts on Coach Cliff Godwin? Are you close to him? Do you stay in contact with him?
You know, I don't. I wasn't close. Cliff finished up playing the year before. Yeah, the year. I think it was the year before I got there, right? He was part of that 0-1 team, correct?
Yeah,
he was. He was.
Yeah.
So I came in 0-2, and he had just finished up, but he was still around. So I know Cliff. I was never particularly close with him. The biggest thing that I was excited about was when Mazie left, I personally was always disappointed we didn't do a national search. I felt like ECU was in the prime. We just opened the stadium. It was the time to really kind of pick and choose who you'd like to lead the program. So when Cliff was offered the opportunity, I was really excited about a former Pirate who knew the history of the program, who had been a part of it, who knows how strongly everyone wants to get to Omaha, was coming back to run that program, especially carrying on what Coach Clara essentially started. So I don't know. I know that he puts on some great teams on the field. I did I went to the alumni letter winners weekend event this year for the first time. And I will say, since he started, I've seen a greater outreach to the alumni, and it just felt good to be home. It felt nice to feel welcomed and part of the program. And he's got a lot of good things going on.
Well, no doubt. And, you know, they always, the old saying, the proof is in the pudding. And, when you look at the number of wins he's had, now we have regular season championship, first one in a decade. There's a lot of checks off the boxes, I guess, with this team, and certainly the program winning 2 out of 3 championships in the for the AAC tournament. We've had hosted a regional, and hopefully be nice to host a super regional. I'm hoping we can do that, but we'll have to. That remains to be seen, I guess, how we play this week, right?
Yeah, definitely. You talk about similarities, and the guys and I were talking, and it feels like I remember when we were going into the conference tournament, I think we kind of thought like, hey, we're top 10. We're going to get a national seed. We didn't assume anything, but man, we kind of crapped the bed in the tournament. I think we won the first one, then lost 2 straight, and we were bounced. And so knowing how these guys are kind of on the fence there, right there on the hump of being an, you know, 7 or 8 seed, they've got to have a strong performance this week at the tournament. Gosh, that opening round loss, I kind of was scared of that pitcher, because if I recall, I feel like he did, that pitcher threw well against us a few weeks ago. Is that correct?
That's correct.
It is, yeah. Clayton McGinnis of Wichita State, he had shut us down out there, and then he unfortunately did the same thing again.
Yeah, that was smart of them to throw him. I would have thrown him again against
us. Oh, yeah.
Too. disappointed we couldn't bounce back and have his number this time around, but that's okay. So hopefully they can continue to rally, and I hope they can get to the championship game. The further they go in this tournament, the greater our chances are of getting that national seed. So hopefully they can pull through with another win.
Now, Ryan, in 2004, you wrapped up your time with the Pirates and moved on to pro baseball. I think you were drafted in the 9th round by the Chicago Cubs. So I know you had a very solid first year in low A ball. So talk about that. And then you missed the 2005 season with the injury and then came back for a couple more seasons. And you overall had some very nice numbers in pro ball. I know in 2006 you hit 15 home runs and drove in quite a few as well.
Yeah, I loved my experience. It was up and down in pro ball. And 2004 was just a magical year. After leaving ECU, we won so many games. I was fortunate enough to be drafted by the Cubs. I went up to short season ball in the Northwest League and played for Boise, Idaho, and was an all-star and had a good season. We actually ended up winning the championship, so that was really cool. It was the first time ever. You know, you see the champagne celebrations in the clubhouse. Now, we weren't celebrating with the same champagne the big leaguers were, but it tasted just as good, and it was just as much fun. But that was incredible. 2005, I broke camp with the Peoria Chiefs. I was playing in an exhibition game before the first game of the season, and rolled my ankle really badly. I missed the whole season. It was a pretty slow, painful rehab. But 2006, I went back to Peoria, played the entire season, had a great year. I think I led the league in hits, and it was just a lot of fun. I loved Peoria and have great memories. And then 2007, I was with the Daytona Cubs down in Florida, and really kind of my biggest challenge as a player was, you know, kind of getting in my own head. So it really kind of got to me, and I was didn't have the year I needed to, and ended up getting released that year. And that was the end of my baseball career, aside from coaching a little bit afterwards. But those were the end of my playing days.
Well, there's a lot of people. I have a really good friend of mine who I went to Barton. I wish he'd play for ECU, but anyway. And he made it to, you know, I was like, if there's any guy that I know that can make it to the majors, it's him. And he was with the Phillies organization. He made it to Double A. And, yeah, and it's like, but he was so good. And that just taught me, man, it's really hard to me. You think it's when a guy like him that's talented, you think, oh, man, he's definitely going to make it to the majors, and you find out just how hard it is to make it to the show.
Yeah, I think you definitely see this unique blend of guys. You have guys that just happen to hang around long enough, and they get the right shot, and they get, you know, they perform when they need to, and they make it. You've got the guys that are purely talented that you just can't deny their skills, and those guys absolutely take off. But you'd be surprised at the mix of guys that come in there and perform, and then other guys that are highly touted, and they come in and they don't do anything. They just can't kind of put it together on the field. So, but like you said, that guy making it to Double A, that's a feat in itself. They say that the odds of making it to the big leagues double or triple if you can make it just to Double A alone. So there's a ton of talent out there at those levels.
Well, can you tell folks what you're doing now that baseball is over, but you had such a great career, better than most. What are you up to now?
Thank you. So I'm living in Richmond, Virginia, which is where I'm from. I trade stocks in Asian stock markets for an asset manager here. So I'm actually just waking up and getting ready to start my day. I work nights. I am married. I married actually a former Pirate swimmer.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I have it's always a little bit more fun heading down to Greenville with her, as she totally gets it, and it feels like home for both of us. I have an 11-year-old daughter. Actually, today's her birthday. And
happy birthday to her.
Yeah, thank you very much. And my wife and I are expecting a child due in October.
Awesome. So we have not but one, but we have maybe two Pirates, future Pirates, certainly. My kids certainly know. They're 5 and 6. And I ask them almost every day about where their college is, and they say East Carolina. So I want them to know that I've planted that seed since birth. I really want them – I'll support them wherever they go. I want them to be happy, but certainly I want them to be a Pirate.
Oh, definitely. One of my favorite sites is is my daughter when she wears. I got her an ECU Pirates jersey for Christmas, and I love it when she wears it. And she loves being in Greenville. I was pleasantly surprised. Every time I take her for a baseball game, she's never played softball or baseball, but every time we go, she sits there and watches, and I'm just surprised. It doesn't seem like something a 10- or 11-year-old would be into. It'd be sitting and watching the game and asking questions.
That's fantastic. And
I had one.
Go ahead, Bubba. Bubba, are you there?
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Got me?
Yeah, I do now.
Something I wanted you to discuss, Ryan, is way back in 2004, you know, your final season with the Pirates, obviously so much momentum, ranked as high as I think it was third in the nation. So the sports marketing and media relations kind of worked together to have those instant interviews. So some of those were very memorable, and I think that was the first time I found out about your first name and how the guys were calling you Big Walt, as I alluded to earlier in the interview. So can you talk about those and how much fun they were?
Oh, God. Those instant interviews. We had an information director named Kerwin, and he was a good sport, and he would pull us up to his office, and we'd jump on a laptop and basically open it up to any questions from the fans. Well, the fans were probably 2 to 3 people from Eastern North Carolina, and then probably about 15 to 20 teammates that were sitting in a computer lab firing in questions. And I can't tell you, we probably, for every one question we answered, we probably deleted 10 inappropriate questions that couldn't be put into print. But those recaps are still out there on the internet. They were so much fun. That really was like the epitome of we're riding high. We can't, this is all fun. Everybody's loving life. Those were great. I wish they'd bring those back, because I feel like you kind of got a little bit of a sense. You could ask the players some serious questions, but then you also got a sense of the teammates. You know, I think Greg Bunn was asked by a teammate who was a better hitter, me or a seventh grade girl. Little things like that. You can't make that up. That stuff was the karma, the chemistry that we had. Was undeniable, and definitely that was one of my better memories of Greenville.
Now, Big Walt, was Kaz the water buffalo, is that right?
Oh, Kaz is absolutely the water buffalo.
Yeah.
He makes this squinched up face, and I don't know what it is. That God, I hope you guys interview him. Kaz, he may not sound super funny on tape, but he is one of the funniest guys. Like, can I tell you a couple Kaz stories?
Sure, absolutely.
Well, my favorite Kaz story was sophomore year. Kaz is from Philly, huge Eagles fan, and we got fall ball practice. Well, Maisie, sometimes I think to be a jerk, would know that the Eagles were playing. So he'd, he'd schedule the fall ball scrimmage, primetime kickoff for the Eagles game. So one day, Kaz comes out, full uniform, and he's got a pocket radio tuned into the game, tucked in his pocket, and he's got a headset running up through his jersey into his ear. Stuff like that. And I don't know if you guys remember the haircuts that guy had. Kaz had no shame. He did plenty of funny things to keep the guys on their toes. And it was pure joy living and playing with Kaz.
Well, Bubba wanted me to let you know that Kaz is definitely coming on the podcast. So we're trying on purpose to space, give you guys individual spotlights as we're moving through this special time. It's kind of surreal with how well the team has done this year. Not that I didn't think they could do well, but they accomplished something they've already made just before postseason. Again, we don't want to compare. It's different eras, obviously, different coaches, different circumstances, but it kind of got us thinking about the 2004 team.
Yeah, I hope we like the fact that we have won 51 games, and that's something that we talk about all the time. But it'd be nice to see someone get to Omaha. You know, that's the one thing no team has ever done. And 15 years, you know, like you said, it's been 15 years, and you think it's time, right? You like holding all the records, but when your school is always the bridesmaid, and I think we have the current streak of the most regional, most tournament appearances without ever making it to Omaha. So
yeah,
I hope that this year's the year that gets broken and ECU gets that national spotlight they deserve and really would put us over the top. It kind of reminds me a lot of UVA, you know, once they kind of broke through, they had so much success there immediately after they went and for the first time. So I hope something like that could be a game changer to put ECU at the, you know, take it to the truly elite program. So fingers crossed the guys pull together. That injury hurt. The guy that went down, that really
hurt. Lane Hoover, yeah.
Yeah, that hurts. But hopefully they pull together and next guy steps up and they get the job done.
As a matter of fact, Trey Benton had surgery this past week, and so he was one of the X factors for me, being a starter for a couple of years. And then he, his junior season, he I believe it was his elbow, he had surgery this week or this past, about a week. I think it's been a week ago now. It's been a handful of days anyway. And so he's a guy that was like it looked like this was going to be a big year for him, and it's been a little bit of a disappointment with the injury. Now we can't see what he does, but I guess that's a blessing in disguise. Maybe he'll be back next year. So being drafted, he'll be here for a senior season, and I think it'll be hard for him to be – I don't know, you're the expert for him to make it based on an injury, but maybe a team would take a chance on him. But I want what's obviously best for him.
Yeah, definitely. A team may take a chance, but I think they probably would like to see him come back and prove himself first. So hopefully that does bode well for ECU and that he can return next year. But with it being the postseason, there are so many magical things that happen in the postseason. So you never know who's going to step up and what can happen. So again, hopefully the next man up can get the job done.
No doubt. And are you going? One final question for you. I know you're getting ready for your day. Are you going? If they make it to Omaha, will you be going?
You know, I text my father. He's retired and he owns an RV, and he and his wife travel around the country. And so anyhow, I think they're planning like a Midwestern trip. And I told him if the Pirates make it, wherever they are, I'm going to need him to bring the RV back towards Omaha so I can have a free place to crash. But I can't guarantee that I will. I heard Daryl say he's already got his ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure a group of guys would get together and make the trip just to see the Pirates in Omaha. I don't think I can take a chance. Knowing how seldom those opportunities come, I think I'd have to be there to take it in.
I think I'll have to get a personal loan or something. I think Bubba and I are going to try to do a road trip or something. I actually have the time off, so we'll have to figure that out. It's a tricky situation. I made a mistake of not who I married, but when I got married, because I got married on June 22nd. And that's around. So anyway, we'll see how that plays out. Hopefully my wife will approve me going during that time.
Yeah.
We'll see how it plays out. But I have the time off for a handful of days, so we'll see how it works. But, Ryan, man, thank you so much. You were really great. And you guys for the 2004 team have been great to the podcast. And hopefully you'll come back. We'd love to have you back on as the season goes on. And hopefully we can be talking regionals, super regionals, and beyond.
Yeah, I'd love that, guys. Thank you so much. It's always an honor to talk about ECU baseball. Such great memories and such a great love for that school. And I'm really thankful for the opportunity and hope you guys all the best. And hopefully we're talking Omaha in a few weeks.
Thank you, Ryan, very much. I appreciated his time. I know that he's from the Richmond area and not too far away, as he talked about just now. His wife is a swimmer and very excited. They have an 11-year-old daughter, and they're going to have a baby on the way and due in October. Just very exciting. Maybe two future Pirates, we hope that they'll come, be like their mom and dad, and come to East Carolina. I remind my kids, as I said in an interview, Alexander McKenzie, I don't know if you do that for Riley and Reese, Bubba, but I told them after high school, they're going to East Carolina.
Oh, yeah. I certainly do everything I can to bring my children up right, in my opinion, and introduce them to purple and gold at an early age. And it's funny, Dave, that you say that, because my 4-year-old Reese, she'll be 5 here in a couple months in the end of August. But that's what Reese, just at random times, like if she hears a fight song or something, or even more random times, just out of the blue, she'll say, "Daddy, let's do the purple and gold cheer."
The kids learned that early on when going to football games over the last couple of years. And so now even at baseball games, last Saturday when we were at the Memphis game, the 96-degree weather, we're enjoying that. That was one of the things they did enjoy about Saturday's game, is a purple gold cheer. So funny that you brought that up as well. Folks, want to remind you again, make sure you listen to our podcast. We've got lots of great content. This time of the year is very busy with baseball, so we have a lot of great stuff coming up. Bub, I want to mention one thing that we've already told people about last year, we had to wait because we're a brand new podcast, but I'm very excited about the watch party, the Sports Objective watch party. Can you tell folks about that? And we have some of the former players already lined up. We don't want to give any information now, but I just want to tell people it's going to start in July.
Yeah, the watch party, something that we had thought about doing last summer, and just being so busy and different things going on, that did not happen. So we certainly intend on doing it this year. You think back to Pirate football down through the years. I mean, you see these games on YouTube at different times. If you're looking for Pirate content, games like the 96 game in Miami when the Pirates won 31-6 over Butch Davis and the 12th-ranked Canes. The 1999 game when Hurricane Floyd wreaked such havoc on Eastern North Carolina, and the Pirates took down the Hurricanes, who were ninth in the nation, at Carter-Finley Stadium. There's so many of them. Earlier in that 99 season, we started off the year with a game against West Virginia in Charlotte. There are a number of games. Which one were you going to mention?
No, I was just going to mention there's so many games, and it's just this the great thing about the watch party is I'll tell folks the parameters are it's going to be football, obviously related, which we know that's some of the biggest games in Pirate history. We'll tell you that. We'll have some of the more known players that may not be some of the known players. And they're, what we're going to do is watch a YouTube, basically on YouTube together, and we'll be able to watch the game. And then we're going to we'll release that podcast for you folks, and it'll be in July and some of July and August as we get ready, kind of like a way to get you ready. I know, Bubba, you're like me, July. I'm ready for football anytime, but it starts in July for me, especially when that's when a lot of the playoff games for the NBA and NHL are over with. And pretty much you have baseball and NASCAR. And that's when I started to miss college and pro football really, really bad. And so we wanted to do something special for you guys. And the podcast, thank you so much for everybody listening. And word of mouth has been huge for us. Our number of listens is growing all the time. And, Bubba, we're very excited about that. How can people – we've got other things that we can promote, but I want to mention to folks that keep it right here for all the latest on ECU baseball as we have more great content coming your way, as we promised. Between now and the end of however long the Pirates are in the postseason, we've got you covered. How can folks find our podcast, Bubba?
Folks can listen to us pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As far as tuning in, and start off right there, TuneIn Radio, download that app. It's a very easy way to listen to our show. iTunes, Google Play Music, SoundCloud. Audio Boom, Blog Talk Radio, about combining the two.
Podbean,
Stitcher, you name it, you can probably find our podcast there. So, and obviously where you're listening to the show right now. But I'm certainly some people have their preferences. I think I generally like listening on Google Play Music, because if it's something that I've heard and I want to skip forward a little bit, you can skip forward in kind of 30-second increments or go backwards in 10-second increments. So that's my favorite place to listen.
Yeah, everybody is kind of like a pair of sneakers or shoes or jeans or whatever. Everybody has their favorite pair, but they all get the job done, right? So wherever you listen, that's fine. Our number of listens have just really grown. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm not saying that to be patronizing. I'm really sincere. Bubba, and I know Kyle would say the same thing. We're just blown away by how quickly this podcast is growing. By the way, folks, if you love the podcast, take the time to give us a 5-star review. That helps us out, obviously. For that, we've got a lot of great cool stuff planned for this summer that we haven't even mentioned yet. We got another big party to talk about. When we get all the final details, we know the date. We're working on some stuff behind the scenes. We'll tell you about that. And, Bubba, how can people reach the show via email?
Via email, we are thesportsobj@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @thesportsobj. Great. On Instagram at the Sports Objective, like and follow us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And we have a new video up there on our YouTube channel that was posted, I guess, about 3 or 4 days ago now, and has right at 1,000 views. There's a video and some still shots of Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium from last Saturday.
had the opportunity to do that when we were out there for the baseball game against Memphis. And something else I wanted to mention, Dave, as far as content we have headed your way, we have the likes of Trent Britt, of course, Next Level Training Center right there in Greenville. We'll catch up with Trent. His son, Dalton, played baseball for Liberty. He was a shortstop for the Flames back a few years ago when Billy Godwin was still at ECU. And then we'll also be catching up with Trey Daly. And Trey Daly's the general manager for the Dirtbags. We'll talk about former Pirates, current Pirates, and future Pirates who played their travel baseball for the Dirtbags. And then we'll also catch up with another player or two from different super regional teams. We'll hear from Mark Minakazi. Kaz, as Ryan Norwood mentioned early in the show, are better known perhaps to his teammates as the Water Buffalo. But Kaz is living out in Arizona now, and really look forward to catching up with him. He was a remarkable third baseman. And then we'll also hear from the leadoff man for that 2001 team that Coach Godwin played on. And I'm talking about Warren Gaspar. Warren G will be joining the show here in the coming days as well. And that, of course, is the only team to ever host a super regional, albeit not in Greenville. It was in Kinston at Granger Stadium. So this year's team, if we host a super regional, will be the first to do so at Clark LeClair Stadium.
It's going to be fantastic. I tell you what, folks, very exciting time. Again, thank you very much to our two great guests, Trevor Lowhorn and Ryan Norwood. I appreciate them so much because they took the time. And, again, I'm just amazed at how great these players are, well-spoken guys, very first-class guys. I'm proud of the fact they're Pirates. I'm proud of the fact of their lives are working. They're doing extremely well after baseball, after college, Bubba. It's great to see. And so I want to honor them. If you put on that uniform for the Pirates, I don't care what sport it is, if it's men's or women's, I'm very proud of you. And that's one of the reasons Bubba knows when I reached out to him, he reached out to me about doing the podcast. We wanted to honor the Pirates, right?
No doubt about it. You know, Dave, kind of where this idea came from, at least on my part, is the Pirate Time Machine was a tremendous article, a column that Ron Cherubini had on Bonesville.net back several years ago.
We need to get him on.
He did an awesome job with that, and yeah, we certainly would like to have Ron on the show, and I've mentioned it to him. We just haven't been able to work out a time and date yet, but I look forward to hearing from Ron and talk about his Pirate memories and all the great Pirates he had the opportunity to include in that column, several of which we've had on the show for that matter, because I know Kevin Walker was one of those.
Yeah. Well, we want to say hello to our good friend Kyle from McGrain's Barber. He actually had to work today. Bubba and I didn't work. Bubba is already off from work, so we had a chance to go ahead and put this out. And again, good luck to the Pirates. We don't know exactly who they're going to be playing, but certainly – if we do get a chance, we're going to try to see if we can get up with whoever wins the game, loses the game, rather. We'll see who whoever the opponent is what I'm trying to say. We'll try to see if we can get a tournament update and an interview with them to kind of give you a preview for the next matchup, which will be tomorrow. Is that 3 o'clock, Friday at 3?
Yes, Friday at 3, the Pirates will play either the Huskies or the Shockers. Right now, a moment ago, we told you that the Huskies had an early 1-0 lead. Well, the Shockers have responded with a 4 spot. So Wichita State 4, UConn 1. And so if that holds up, the Pirates will be playing the Huskies tomorrow in an elimination game and then hopefully taking care of business to move on to have a rematch and have to beat the Shockers twice on Saturday.
And reminding you folks, our great friend Pirate Al, we're going to try to get him on next week. He put a great post on Hoist the Colors. Our good friend Steve and I go host hoistthecolors.net. Well, the message board, he really feels like we need to win 2 games to host a super regional. If we can go 2-2, at least. So that would mean that we'd have to win again tomorrow, being Friday, if we can win the next game, we've got a good shot at hosting a super regional. We don't know that, obviously, right now. Who knows how they'll turn to get that national seed. We'll find out on Monday. Again, don't forget, folks, if you want to go to that game, go to that viewing party. It's at Sub Dogs, downtown Greenville. at 11 a.m. on Monday for Selection Monday. We'll try to keep you up to date between now and then. For Kyle from the Greens Barber, who was not here, our great guest. We had two great guests today, as always. Trevor Lowhorn and Ryan Norwood and Bubba Rosenbaum. I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.